What I'm going to talk about is a joint work of Tom Coates and myself. It is not entirely new work. The details are not fully published yet, but you can find the details in Tom's thesis, which is available on the internet, and it's kind of a year and a half old. And I had some chances to talk about the subject several times, never quite successfully, so I'm trying explain this theory. I think that it has what mathematics... No, there is no good. But it does contain, the theory does contain what mathematics usually contains, some element of some beautiful formula and also a mystery attached to it. So therefore, I just hope to convey this idea. In general words, the plan can be explained very easily. We deal with Gromov invariants in terms of cohomology theory as intersection indices, but we could thus extraordinary cohomology theory, so we could generalize them going to say to K theory or even more generally to complex Kabordian theory, which is the most general extraordinary cohomology theory where complex vector bundles are orientable. And therefore the plan to define Gromov-Witten invariants with values in complex Kabordian and then maybe compute them in terms of cohomological Gromov-Witten invariants, which would be the meaning of quantum Hirzebruch-Riemann-Roch theorem. By the way, it's not the way we arrived at the theory I'm going to talk about, but if you go back to Kantsevich's paper about general zero Gromov-Witten invariants and toroid actions, the first paper on the subject, then there is a remark there which I didn't understand at the time, so that he says that Gromov-Witten invariants can be defined with values in Kabordians because moduli spaces of stable maps come naturally equipped with virtual tangent bundles. Probably some of you understand what this means. If not, then in a few minutes we'll have to figure out what he meant by this. So in some sense, this proposal was more or less obvious from the very beginning of the theory. What is complex Kabordian theory? You know very well what is Bordism theory. So if there is some space, topological space B, then U sub N of B, it's a group consisting of the following objects. If there is some manifold Z and it's mapped to B, then it is a Bordian class. You need Z to be equipped with stably almost complex structure, which means that the direct sum of tangent bundle with a trivial bundle should be equipped with a complex structure. And of course, you mod out by maps of Bordisms to B, the equivalence relations that you know very well. Again, there should be some stable, almost complex structure on everything here in compatible way. So this is the Bordism group. If B is itself a manifold equipped with a stably almost complex structure, there is a sort of Poincaré isomorphism of this with dimension B minus N cobordism group. It's actually the meaning of Pantryagin-Thom construction. What's a cobordism element? Abstractly is defined by a homotopy class of map from B to some Thom spaces, but the construction is that you take, if it's a manifold, you bring the map to general position to the zero section, so it's Thom space, it's a Thom space of the universal UN U something bundle, and so you take zero section and pull it back, and you get some submanifold sitting in suspension of B actually, and then you forget anything except the projection of it to B, and you have a Bordism class. Therefore, this and goes both ways. So this is this classical construction using transversality theorems that its meaning actually is Poincaré isomorphism in Kabordism theory. In particular, if we take B to be the point, so therefore the ring of Kabordian of the point is at least over Q, I will deal with everything over Q. So think that everything is tensored with Q is known to be, and it's essentially it follows from Tom's computation. It's a polynomial algebra in complex projective spaces. So the therefore, if B is the points or just absolute bodies and classes are the basis over Q. Just products of complex projective spaces, but what I said, so actually this is a description in terms of Bordism, not cobordism. Therefore, the degree of CPN is what? The dimension of the point, which is 0 minus the dimension of CPN. Therefore, it's, you get degrees minus 2, minus 4, minus 6, etc. So it's a polynomial ring with generators of these degrees. Well, I'm afraid that this is the end of the kind of elementary cobordism theory. So the more advanced subject is the following. One can define characteristic classes of vector complex vector bundles with values in cobordisms. By splitting principle, it suffices to do this for universal line bundles. Therefore, if we have CP infinity, all of one, so there is, well, I will probably denote this bundle L at some point, but therefore this is a universal S1 or U1 bundle. Its cobordism valued Perchan class is supposed to be sitting in the second cobordism group of CP infinity, and well, it's what you really think it is. So consider a hyperplane section here, CP infinity minus 1. Of course, infinity means a very large finite number here, so there is some limiting procedure here. But so the CP infinity, it's not fundamental that the Bordism class of hyperplane section in CP infinity is the is Poincaré dual, so therefore Poincaré dual in that sense of this is by definition the first chain Bordism values first chain class of this universal line bundle. There is this a little bit less elementary part of the theory because it's immediately related to formal. Group, the role of the formal groups in cobordism theory, namely there is a tensor product operation of vector bundles, which means that if you have two universal bundles with say these cobordism Chern classes V and W and you form the tensor product, then this bundle can be induced from the universal bundle by some map, and therefore the first Chern class of this bundle should be computable somehow. And actually, these guys generate the cobordism rings. The hyperplane class generates cobordism rings of CP infinity. Therefore, it should be some function of V and W. Therefore, there is some, and in the first approximation, it is V plus W, but actually it's not. There is an infinite series there. And one of the properties of this series is that it defines a formal group law on the line with coordinates with one variable, say U. And the reason for that is just because the tensor product of, if you consider three line bundles, there is a tensor product of three of them, and it's associative. So associativity and invertibility of line bundles implies that it's a formal group law. Okay, so the next piece of the general equation so far. The general next piece of the general theory is the Chern character. So in fact, you can think of cobordisms of a space in cosmological terms, because there is such a, it's called Chern-Dold character. It's a multiplicative homomorphism, natural multiplicative homomorphism from cobordism theory to cohomology theory. Actually, to cohomology of B with coefficients in cobordism of the point. Yeah, so therefore you can think of cobordism theory as just cohomology with such with this coefficient, defined over Q. And here I'm denoting it by capital CH to emphasize it's different from the Chern character in case you already know. According to some machinery or matter of topology, really in order to define, to construct it, what you need to know, the main thing that you need to know is just what to do with this first Chern, the universal first Chern class, this particular class. Let me denote it somehow. I will denote it. Yeah, it is U. Okay. I denoted it U here. Okay. So, with this class U of this space, therefore, there is, so in, if B is CP infinity, there is a Bordesian class U, which when expressed in cohomological terms, should be an element of degree 2 in this graded ring. Again, B is CP infinity, let me denote Z, the cohomological first Chern class of the universal line bundle. Then it should be, well, in the first approximation it is Z, but then it should be plus alpha 1 Z squared plus alpha 2 Z cubed, etc. Then to be some series in Z with coefficients which are elements of this coefficient ring. So it should be an element of this form. Right? Now it's asking me what are these alphas. The answer can be given, but it's usually given in the inverse series is easy to describe geometrically. This is some like Mishenko formula, which says that Z is a function of U, if you invert the series, is U plus CP 1 over 2 U squared plus CP 2 over 3 U cubed, etc. So the coefficients are 1 over N. For obvious reasons, it's called the logarithm of the formal group. So one of the reasons just resembles the logarithmic series. More precisely, if you specialize Cobordian theory to K theory, which means that you replace these spaces by their arithmetical genus, by the number, which is 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. Then you get indeed the logarithmic series. Most precisely, you get logarithm of 1 of 1 minus U, which means that U is 1 minus E to minus Z. And you can recognize here the kind of the K-theoretic, well, the Chern character of the K-theoretic Euler class. Right, it's a kind of Chern character of line bundle minus schedule complex of the universal line bundle, it's Chern character. U is by definition is that Cobordian it's a Cobordian class of CP infinity minus 1 and CP infinity, so it's a first Chern class, universal first Chern class in the sense of Cobordian theory. Z is a similar class in cohomology theory, if B is CP infinity, Z generates this cohomology multiplicatively over coefficient ring of the theory, right? And U generates a Cobordian ring also over coefficient ring of the theory, and if there is the Chern those characters should act on U and should produce some element in cohomology. So I'm interpreting class here in these terms. And it should have this form where alphas are some elements of the coefficient. Huh? What? U lives in Cobordian. Okay, yeah, I think I will schematically now omit this. I think that U is identified with the series, right? Right. Okay. And that's the second meaning. So the first one is just it resembles the logarithmic series. And if you want to know what alphas are, you can recompute by inverting the series what they are in terms of CPNs. But anyway, this is just some set of, another set of generators of this ring. Some sort of just arbitrary coefficient, doesn't matter what they are. Just if you forget the geometric meaning of Cobordianism as something related to spaces, it's just some series of arbitrary coefficients. And the second meaning is the following, that of course, the Chern class, the cohomological first Chern class behaves additively with respect to the tensor product, and really the role of this series, it trivializes this this multiplication, this addition law. Therefore, what really... okay, so the this f of v of x, where v of x means v of x means this formula where u replaced with v and z with x. U of x, u of y is equal to u of x plus y. So, therefore, in other words, in order to write down this formula, what you need to do, you need to write this series of x plus y and then express it in terms of u of x and u of y. That's what it is. So, therefore, in fact, of course, this group law on the line is just addition of numbers, but written in a weird coordinate defined by this diffeomorphism of the line. In that sense, this is logarithm of the group, of the formal group. Well, anyway, there is such a multiplicative character from one cohomology theory to another, it means that there is a corresponding formal Hirzebruch-Riemann-Roch theorem, namely, down here. Namely, suppose that we have some space, well, some manifold, stably almost complex manifold B, and it's mapped to a point, then there should be a direct image operation of this way, which it's clear what it is. If there is some, in terms of Poincaré dual terms, if there is a Bordism class representing some element here, then you just forget, you compose the maps, just consider just the absolute class of Z in Tom's ring of Cobordism, and that's what push forward is. But you should be able, by virtue of this homomorphism, to compute the answer in cohomological terms. Therefore, well, if this is pi and pi star of, so if there is some element A here, and pi star of A, it's the construction that I just described, just forgetting B in this this map, remembering Z. Then at the same time, and this is an element of the coefficient ring of the Cobordian theory, it should be at the same time computable as integral over the manifold B. Well, there is a general abstract form, so there should be the Chern character of A, defined in principle by starting with this construction and generalizing to all manifolds and all spaces and all Cobordian classes, times the Todd of the tangent bundle of B, which, by the way, know that those who were here on Tuesday, I was using one's notation for the Todd class, but I was using the small letter T there, because the Todd class is not the Todd class in K-theory that you know. It's a generalization in Cobordian theory. What's Todd class? In general, it's a multiplicative class of vector bundles, which is suffices to define it for a universal line bundle. And, of course, as always, it is the ratio of the cohomological and Cobordian valued Euler classes of the line bundle. It's just a general rule. Therefore, this is the Todd of L, of the universal line bundle. But at the same time, it is that the universality, universal role of Cobordian theory with respect to complex vector bundles, it is a cohomological characteristic class of vector bundles, right? So it's multiplicative, so it should. You can write the series as in this way, where Sk has some coefficients. Which means that in general it is, therefore, this top class of bundle is E to the sum of Sk, Chern K, now it's usual components of the Chern character of the bundle E, with some coefficients. The coefficients are computable from just this expansion of series. What are Sk here? Well, again, Sk, you can compute them in terms of CPENs, but one line that they are just yet another set of generators case here from 1 to infinity, all of the coefficient rings. So you can forget a lot of d-majors, just think that these are arbitrary parameters. So this sk, so this is q, s1, s2, etc. So they're arbitrary coefficients. Therefore, this is a general multiplicative characteristic class of complex vector bundles. Okay. So, therefore, this already tells us, maybe it's enough of general Kobordian theory. This tells us what to do if we want to generalize Gromov-Witten theory to take values in Kobordians. So, namely, well, what are Gromov-Witten theories usually? So we have some target space, Keller, almost Keller, target space X. Consider moduli spaces of stable maps or of certain genus and the number of mark points, and again the degree is kind of, I'm summing over degrees here in this notation. And yes, as Maxim Kantsevich wrote correctly, so the spaces come equipped with virtual tangent bundles, which I will denote this way, TGN, maybe X should be there if I want to emphasize the target. So there are virtual tangent spaces to this moduli space. There is some deformation theory behind, so that's why they're there. And therefore, if I... okay, so what are Gromov-Witten invariants in general? So we take some classes, say classes AI from this time from Kobordian ring of the target instead of cohomology. And well, if you want gravitational descendants, it means that well, over the spaces there are these line bundles, LIs, universal cotangent line bundles corresponding to mark points, I varies from 1 to n. And they have, well, usually we use in intersection theory in these spaces, we use psi I's, which are cohomological Hertzian classes of those, but we can use a Kobordian valued Hertzian classes this time, right? And so therefore we can, what we want is to define correlators like maybe I denote this capital psi I, the Hertzian class with values in Kobordians of these line bundles. So psi 1 to k1, a n psi n to k, and that's what we would like to defined by doing some kind of intersection theory with values and Kobordians on this space. And there is a problem here. In fact, these are, even in the virtual sense, they are not manifolds, they are orbifolds. And so Kobordian theory for orbifolds is at least as subtle as the K theory would be, actually more subtle. And so there might be even some technical problem in defining, honestly, this invariant, but at least what we can do, we can mimic just what thinking of Kobordian theory can do, equivalent thing, we can express the answer in terms of cohomology theory by using formally this Chern-Dold character. Therefore, we can define it as an integral of over Mg and virtual fundamental class, and take what? Take the product of Chern-Dold characters of AIs on the target space, the evaluation at mark points pull back to, well, use the corresponding cohomology classes here, or this psi i's, the Chern-Dold character is if u of little psi i's of the classes, sort of this universal series u of z instead of z substituting this cohomological psi class. And according to this formula, what I should do, therefore this would be some cohomological intersection Gromov-Witten invariant, and here I should add therefore this Todd class of the tangent bundle of the moduli space, and that's where I need this virtual tangent bundle. But what it is therefore it is e to the sum of sk term k of this virtual tangent bundle tgm. Period. Then, therefore, then the next question would be, okay, can we compute it in terms of cohomological Gromov-Witten invariants, which means that, well, there is sort of new ingredient, the only new ingredient compared to the ordinary cohomology theory is that we now bring into intersection theory new classes, namely characteristic classes of this virtual tension bundles. In fact, as I said, this plan is not the way we arrived at this problem. It was quite the opposite. So we were thinking a little bit of case theory and quantum case theory, but essentially at some point what we wanted to do with Tom is just really to do something familiar, to bring exactly what's written here, just to consider usual Gromovitz invariants, but bring in this Chern classes of the virtual tension bundles as new ingredients for the intersection theory. And then just try to see if they're new or not, or if they're not, then compute them in terms of ordinary Gromovitz invariants. So for this, therefore, we need to, in order to do that, we need to understand this tangent spaces, the tangent bundles, and it's sort of immediate to sort of make progress in this direction is very easy. So, therefore, what are these virtual tangent bundles? So, therefore, we're talking about modular space of stable maps to some target space from many surfaces, and talking about deformation theory, so how to describe deformations of such maps. And of course, there's some obvious piece of this is when you fix a complex structure on the remaining, so fixed complex structure on the remaining surface, and consider just variations of the maps. And there is Cash-Riemann operator, so therefore there is a tangent bundle on the target, you pull it back to the curve, so variations of the map are kind of vector fields along the map, and there is a Cash-Riemann operator on sections of that bundle, and so the index of that Cash-Riemann operator is this part of this virtual tension bundle. There is the index of the D-bar operator on kind of T, yeah, there is a map of sigma to X, F, then there is F star Tx pullback, so therefore there is corresponding Cash-Riemann operator. It's a familiar thing. So, it's not the end. There is something else there. Kind of the good news about this part is the following. So it is. So we already considered it on Tuesday, or Jim considered it yesterday. So it is that. So what we are doing, therefore, we are taking the curve sigma, restricting tangent bundle, taking global sections, and maybe subtracting H1 if it is there. So it is so therefore, if this were everything, so if you replace T by this part, it means that we're considering just twisted Gromovitz invariants, twisted by this bundle E, which is happens to be the tangent bundle to the target. So it's exactly, therefore, this what I denoting E, G, N, where E is this tangent bundle. So it's therefore the corresponding invariants are just Gromovitz invariants twisted by characteristic classes of this index bundle for which is constructed just from a particular bundle on the target. But that particular bundle in this case is a tangent bundle to X. So therefore, in principle, we know how to express this. And that was the subject of I talk on Tuesday. It is the content of that quantum Riemann-Roch theorem. It's how to express characteristic classes of these bundles in terms of simpler Gromovitz invariants. And so the point is that this MG and X, you can consider the universal curve over it, MG n plus 1. Bar and the evaluation map to the target. So really what's happening here is there is this bundle, this time E equal to Tx, pull back here and push forward here. That was this E, E, G, and bundle E's here. But so in order to compute characteristic classes of this bundle, you can use Grothendieck-Riemann-Roch theorem on for this bundle, for this vibration, and reduce everything to computation upstairs in terms of simpler. So the point is, therefore, this bundle is a push forward of something simpler along this universal curve, and therefore the Gratian decrement Mirock theorem allows us to express what we want in terms of simple Gromov-Witt invariants. Yeah, so therefore, and the answer, the quantum Riemann-Mirock theorem would describe the answer. There was some long formula. We'll come to that again today, but in principle, therefore, we know what to do with this part. Moreover, it's not only we know what to do, but we kind of spoiled with success with this kind of formulas, quantum Riemann-Roch formulas, and other results. Namely, we knew kind of a priori that what is supposed to happen in general is something like that. So there is some formalism that I described on Tuesday, but I will repeat it today, which allows to handle all in nice combinatorial way all the formulas that come out of such Gratian decrement Riemann-Roch computations or many other things. Namely, to remind you, we would start with vector space H, which is a cohomology of the target space. Consider space of Lorentz series in one indeterminate, which in the determinant is in fact this universal cohomological first chunk class. Introduce appropriate symplectic structures there. Then consider the corresponding Fock space as the place where generating functions for Gromov-Witt invariant should lie. There are many formulas involving this formalism and expressing various facts in Gromov-Witt in theory, which all have the following nature. So there is actually the symmetry group of this datum, in particular this loop space with vector coefficients, is acted upon by a loop group. So there is the loop group of G, L, H, and some part of it preserves the symplectic structure. There is this loop group acting there, and somehow all the formulas that we knew in many situations would involve just, would relate to different kinds of invariants by some transformations that come from this loop group as some symplectic transformation defined by a group element quantized and acting appropriately on the Fock space. So therefore, what we expect is therefore that something like that should happen here. So there is a formalism which handles successfully all the problems of this kind, and it should work here too. I think you will hear today more about this formalism and this loop group, because it's there is a conjecture that's acting on by symmetries on Gromov-Witt and theory, so it's preserved the axioms of Huygens Gromov-Witt and theory, and so therefore, it's really, there is some reason why the elements of this group always occur in various meaningful formulas in Gromov-Witt and theory. Well, anyway, so that was the plan. But then, if you look at what is here, then it's kind of sort of doesn't fit our expectations. So first of all, what is left here? So there is a variation of complex structures on the Riemannian surface itself, right? So therefore, it is essentially a tangent space to the Riemann-Prandtl spaces. Right, variations of complex structure. In first approximation, it is the same as taking quadratic differentials on the Riemannian surface. So it's not exactly true, because the surface could be singular, etc. But first approximation is quadratic differentials. Quadratic differentials, it means that, again, it is computable in terms of push forward of something here to here. And maybe I can even say what. So if there is, there is this bundle L I corresponding to the last mark point that we're forgetting here. And in fact, if you take one, so the trivial one-dimensional bundle minus the universal cotangent line in the point that you forget here, which is more or less a tangent, actually inverse. It's more or less tangent bundle, so inverse of it, more or less tangent bundle to the curve. And push it forward, then you get the dual space to quadratic differentials. And so therefore, really, the game is this way. If you subtract C, and I think that so therefore this part is a push forward. So you can see the push forward of this, and then push forward of that. Then they together cover most of what you need here. Namely, what this gives you, it's not the whole tangent bundle, but the logarithmic tangent bundle of the Delimanprandt spaces, not Delimanprandt, of this moduli spaces. I didn't finish the bread, but what so there is So there is something left after you add this part, and it's the following thing. So this part together, it is not the tangent bundle of the modular space table mass, but it is a logarithmic one. It means that it corresponds to the shift of section, shift of vector fields, which are tangent to the compactifying divisor there. So it's a logarithmic tangent bundle. So therefore, what is left here is actually concentrated on that compactifying divisor, which corresponds to reducible curves. And again, it's a good news because it means that you can kind of inductively, you can by gluing, therefore, express that thing in terms of simpler moduli spaces with lower genus or number of mark points, and therefore, again, recursively can compute whatever you want in terms of ordinary Gromov-Witten invariants. Therefore, once again, there is kind of two applications of Grothendieck-Riemann-Roch. So in principle, if you want to make sure that we can compute this new Gromov-Witten invariants in terms of old ones, then it seems that, yes, we can do that because we can do using Grothendieck-Riemann-Roch something here, something else here, and what is left is gives us some recursion to lower genus, etc. So it's good news. We can, in principle, do that. But then you start thinking of the actual formula, what is the answer? And there is a puzzle here, because we know this part is handled well by the formalism and machinery of quantum Riemann-Roch. And here it's easy to compute what happens, but it looks different. It has nothing to do with the loop group, really. It looks unfamiliar to us, looked unfamiliar to us. And even worse here, so this gluing, you can imagine what it means. So if you kind of you try to compute in terms of generating functions, what it means, some quadratic differential operator, so it's, but it looks like quantization of some quadratic Hamiltonian maybe, but it doesn't come from, if you look at it, it doesn't come from loop group. It really has nothing to do with the formalism that we knew very well. And so that was the puzzle of how to, it looks terrible recursion, so there's awful relations which we don't know how to understand the combinatorial nature of those. And it turns out that in order to understand this, it is necessary to interpret this originally cohomological equation as the right-hand side of this formula. Therefore, if we understand that the question we're asking is just the right-hand side of something that belongs to Cobordism theory, then somehow it dictates some change in this formalism, a generalization from cohomology to Cobordism theory. And somehow this, just the change of the generalization of the formalism, just changing setup of cohomology to Cobordism theory, automatically handles whatever is here, whatever comes from a moduli of Riemannian surfaces themselves. And so that's actually a mystery. So therefore, I will explain now what is the generalization of this generalized formalism. But my point is that it is some purely combinatorial construction dealing with, you know, some formal series, spaces of some formal series in some variables, which is kind of motivated by the concept of the formal group on the line. And somehow, nevertheless, this formalism knows everything there is to know in Gromov-Witten theory about moduli of Riemannian surfaces. Not moduli of maps. Maps, it's a different thing, but variations of complex structures on surfaces. And therefore, somehow, there is this mysterious marriage between, between, you know, formal groups or whatever combinatorics come from there and moduli of Riemannian surfaces, which might not look so mysterious if you just think of in terms of diffeomorphism groups of on the line, but anyway, so we don't know what is why it happens and what is the significance of this relationship, but that's what suggested by the result we see. Okay, so now let me describe what is the formalism and what is the eventual final formulation of the relationship between Cobordian valued and cohomological valued Gromov-Witten invariants. In cohomology theory, for those who were here on Tuesday, it might be easy, they've seen this formulas, but I'm repeating. So everything is formally dependent. So in cohomology theory, you start with vector space H, which is the cohomology of the target space. And of course, its counterpart in Cobordism theory, we take U to be the Cobordism space of X, in terms of this. everything is over Q here. So there is an intersection pairing here. It's a part of the datum, and there is a Kobordian valued intersection here as well. So let me write it this way: A, B, U. Well, there are what is this? So the okay, I can think of pi as a map from X to the point. Then it is pi star of A cross B. This is cross B over the diagonal. Well, anyway, the meaning is the following: you have two Bordism classes, two submanifolds in X. You intersect them in general position, and the absolute Bordism class of the intersection is the intersection index with values in Kobordians. Just means that I'm. Two maps of two manifolds to X. There is Cartesian product of maps to X cross X. There is an inverse image of the diagonal. It's what is zero. So in pi star, it means that that's a product operation in Kobordism, and then I just evaluate, take push forward to the pointer. Just remember the absolute Bordism class of the manifold. Anyway, there is some intersection pairing, as always. I would introduce the space of Laurent series with vector coefficients in H with one indeterminate 1 over Z. And here, naturally, we introduce this space of Laurent series with coefficients in U respect to the variable U. It's, again, U is the Chern Kobordian valued the universal search and class of line bundles in Kobordian theory. Z is, has the same meaning as homology theory. We're going to compare the two theories. Therefore, we need to use a Chern character, and so therefore there is a quantum Chern character, which is a map from here to here, and the way it acts. So there is a Laurent series with coefficients in Kobordian of X, then it goes to. It's clear what should happen here. So I should replace Fk by the Chern-Gold character of Fk to get a cohomology class. Actually, it will be not to this space, but tensor product with the coefficient ring of the Kobordian theory. Or actually, even a bit worse, I need to complete. So this. The string of polynomials in CP1, CP2, I have to make it formal series at some point, so there are some little details here, but let's ignore them. So, therefore, the coefficients, just to get coefficients in cohomology with this coefficient, then U, of course, is replaced by U of Z, by that series, so U is expressed in terms of Z, that universal formula. There is a sum over K, and there is one more detail. I want to. There's some mismatch between the inner product here. If I express in cohomological terms, it means that it's integral over X of AB times the Todd class of the tangent bundle of X. And therefore, it differs from what is here under this identification. And to match them, I will multiply by the square root of the Todd of TX. Means that I kind of split this into two parts, and then therefore this operation coefficient wise preserves therefore the respect the inner product in the space. Okay. The next thing is a symplectic structure. So as I said, so my plan is therefore to construct some Fock space, therefore starting with symplectic space, and make generating function for Gromit invariant sitting in the Fock space, and then write down some formulas in terms of some transformations on the space. So using quantum mechanical formalism. And so, the symplectic. Actually, what I want is that this operation. What was the symplectic structure here? In the cohomology theory, it was the following: there are two Laurent series, F. And g in the variable z, then I would write f of minus z, g of z, pair the coefficient using the Poincaré pairing, and then compute the residue. And this would be my, by definition, my symplectic form of the pair of Lorentz series. I can write a similar formula here, but similar, well, what's similar? So really what I want is that this quantum Chern character, I want it to be symplectic more, identify some space symplectically. Therefore, I really, in some sense, I don't want to change anything. I'm writing the same thing. So far, I'm writing the same thing in different notation. And so, therefore, what should I do there? I should write, therefore, this Kabordian valued symplectic form of F, G. These are Lorentz series in U, would be 1 over 2 pi I, residue. There is this Kabordian valued pairing of the coefficients. Now, what should I do here? So, what should be here, obviously, if I don't want to change anything, is F of U star, where U star is the inversion alteration in the formal group. So, because really it means that U star of Z is U of minus Z. So, the inversion alteration in cohomology, Z goes to minus Z. And after this, diffeomorphism is, it is this operation, so therefore I should take U of minus Z and express it as some function of Z. So that's, therefore this is, this what should be here. So U star of U should be here. But therefore it exactly means that after the Chern character I'm not changing anything. Because expressed in terms of Z just means changing the sign of Z like here. But also I should write some measure here, and the measure is dz. But dz, you see that now there is a nice formula. This Michelinga formula says that dz actually is the sum to u to k cp k du. K is from 0 to infinity. So this is a differentiate, the series of this one. So there is, therefore, a nice formula is a sum. CPK can take out of the integral, but therefore this time, if you forget about cohomology series, the formula for the symplectic form looks more complicated and more interesting. In a sense, yeah, but it looks natural still, right? This sum. Yeah.
Could you also modify this pairing in U? I mean, the pairing, there you come out of
No, the pairing is this one, defined naturally, is it has this form, this identification is defined in such a way that it actually agrees with this one. So that's why, therefore, this Chern, quantum Chern character will identify the spaces symplectically with this formula. Therefore, so far I was, therefore, introducing the formalism which would look natural in, on the left-hand side, but at the same time would not be new. Compared to the right-hand side, would be exactly the same thing, right there. The next thing that I need to do is, okay, so we have some generating functions for Gromov-Witt invariants, right? Say, D in cohomology theory, which is it's a total descended potential of the target space X, which by definition has the form of its exponential series. There is a genus expansion, H to G minus 1, then generating functions for genus G, Gromov-Witt invariants of the target space, including gravitational descendants. And they are, doesn't matter if you know them or not, they're just some formal series whose coefficients are the intersection indices that I was mentioning before. Anyway, if you think what are their functions, they are defined as formal functions of a sequence of variables, which are vector variables with values in H in cohomology. Therefore, so TK are elements in H. It is a function on there is my symplectic space H, space of Lorentz series, and there is a polynomial part of it which I call H plus. It's polynomial in Z, and this is some formal function on this space, on H plus. And there is a similar function in Kobordian theory, which again has the same structure, because everything there is a sum here over the general theory. So Kobordian's a version of it, and there are no, so how should you know them? Oh, some other keys, okay. T0, T1, etc. And similarly, therefore, I should think of there's a space U, and there is subspace U plus, which is polynomials in U, right? And that's what happens here. So really, the ingredient of intersection theory, I take the Kobordian classes of the target space and multiply them by Fortran class powers of Fortran classes of universal cotangent lines. That's why this expression occurs. So, and this is a function on this space. So there are now two elements in the formalism. So one of them is that's called the Dilaton shift. This is a Dilaton shift, which in cohomology theory was the following. Really, I consider this function not as just a function, a formal function on the space defined in the neighborhood of the origin, but I shift it to the point minus 1, z. So therefore, I'm using the vector 1 in the cohomology to shift the origin in one of the variables. Therefore, if I'm thinking of some kind of Darboux coordinates on this space, and there are, well, Q0, Q1, ZQ2, Z square are notations for elements in this space, so these are my Darboux, kind of vector Darboux coordinates, then it means that Q0 is T0, but Q1 is T1 minus 1, and the others are the same as QK. Therefore, I'm shifting in this T1 by 1. And for some reason, it is, which I'm not going to explain now, it is an important part of the formalism. It makes all formulas look simpler and more natural, more homogeneous, etc. So, therefore, I'm interpreting this as a function on this formal function of, this, of the variables Q, which shifts its origin, formal function near point minus 1z. So what should be happen on this side? Well, it turns out that, and this is the first difference. Really. So far, we were this quantum channel cavity will really identify the object, but now there is some difference. It should be, so this minus z, it's inversion in the formal group. Right? And that's what I should do here. Therefore, Q, this Dilaton shift Q of U should be related to T of U in this way, plus U star of U. And here, therefore, this Q of Z is T of Z minus 1 times Z. So, therefore, if you start comparing them, so there is a serious discrepancy between the, translate this to that language, and there is a discrepancy. This U of minus Z plus minus Z. There's a mismatch there. But now it's not the end yet, because what I wanted to have elements in the Fock space, and so far I just described functions on this space. And you know, it's not enough to half of the, so there are functions of half of the variables, but it's not enough to say that these are elements of the Fock space. The Fock space is a representation of the Heisenberg group, or Heisenberg-Lie algebra of the symplectic space. And therefore, what I need to do, I need to extend the functions to the whole symplectic space in a constant way, along sort of, I need polarization. So here we do the following. We consider H minus, which is the polar part of our own series. There will be two Lagrangian subspaces with respect to my symplectic structure, and we would have, we think therefore of this as T star of H plus, and therefore extend my function by as a constant along these fibers, and this way make it this function of symplectic space with sort of natural action of the Heisenberg algebra. And therefore it's a legitimate element of the Fock space. Now you start moving here, and here there is some news. So the natural thing to take is this U minus. You take it, therefore, again, polar part of Lorentz series, and then you realize that with this symplectic structure, as we introduced, there's absolutely no reason why there should be in Lagrangian subspace. So therefore, you cannot do that. So you need some Lagrangian subspace, and you don't know what to do. Therefore, at this point, you have to rethink sort of more conceptually what is your choice of polarization? Why are we doing this? Why are we taking this polarization? Why there are Lagrangian subspaces? And the answer is given by the following formula. And so far, therefore, everything was on the side of formal group theory was built up of natural objects there, this inversion in the group. But now there is some, and even the symplectic structure was built of the Mischenko formula. And now there is some kind of new element there. Namely, there is such a, let's write down such a residue. It can be computed depending on, so therefore it's residue in Z, and there is first order pole. This function, first approximation, is just Z minus X minus Z minus Y. There are poles at Z equal X and Z equal to minus Y, and depending on what happens if both poles are outside or both are inside, as one can compute, you get zero residue. And if one of them, so if if x is inside, you get 1 over u minus x minus y, and if the other way around, get minus that. Well, it is such a nice and simple residue formula. It turns out that it is kind of responsible for kind of Darboux coordinates in that space and for polarization. So, namely, I can take this 1 over u minus x minus y and expand it. So, suppose that I take that space u plus and I take any basis uk of z, k is equal to 0, 1, etc., some topological basis there. For instance, I can take z to k or u to k, it doesn't matter what, some base in the space of polynomials. Then I can expand this for, say, in the function uk of x, for x less than y, with some coefficients which are Lorentz series in y. For example, if we take just minus one divided by minus x minus y, then it is a sum, under this restriction, the sum of geometrical sequences written as x to k divided by minus y to k plus 1. Right? And actually, this whole thing is just this expression times something analytic, and so you just multiply by it, so you can get this expression with respect to x to k. Well, then the statement is the following. So, when you have this, consider these functions, therefore VK of Z, which are read of these formulas, then this, so this is a half of a Darboux basis by definition. You take in some Lagrangian subspace, takes, so U plus is Lagrangian, so you take some basis there. Then these things are automatically just a completion of the whole thing. It's a dual Darboux basis, so the whole thing is a Darboux basis in this space. So, I don't know, it's a simple consequence. For instance, the fact that these functions, okay, maybe I'll do this computation if you give me a minute. For instance, I want to show that VK and VL are scalar-orthogonal. But so it means that I should compute the residue of the, so what I'm doing really, I want to show that it's equal to zero. So what I'm doing, I'm writing, one over the generating function for what?
Generating function for the vector times the dual vector is 1 over x plus y, right?
No.
It's the cohomology computation.
It's cohomology, yeah. Yeah.
Right. And then you just pull it, since your integral, just pull back of that.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not that. That's what I'm saying.
Is.
No, the spaces are, no, this is different. This is, this, say, this, these are spaces of pullback by what?
By your integral on the coordinate side. It's a change of variable from that same integral on the cohomology.
Yeah, but the space, so in one case we have space spent by these monomials.
Yes.
And it's not pullback of that. Pullback of that space, no, okay.
Okay.
It's not that. It's not it. It's not it. So there is really this multiplication brings the deformation. This is not the same the same subspace. So that's the whole point. So
I'm this is a reproducing kernel for the inner product. And it's just a pull there, right? What you read is a reproducing kernel for the inner product.
I don't know, I don't see it this way, so maybe you're right, but okay, so there is, what's going on there is, as much as I'm concerned, so there is this, the following thing. So this function is written as sum of uk of x, vk of z, the other one, the sum, the other is the sum uk, ul of y, maybe minus z here, ul of y, vl of z. So this residue, when it's computed, therefore, it gives me the sum of UKX VLY times omega VK VL. Therefore, on the other hand, I know that this is zero from this formula, which means that all these numbers are zero. So it's just something like that. This was the kind of computation you meant. Okay. Yeah. So, therefore, what I'm doing now, therefore, I take U minus to be the subspace spanned by all these functions. And so what is important, therefore, if you apply this quantum Chern character, then you'll see that the image of that subspace here is not just, it's not H minus. It's H minus when, you know, there's, you can think of this picture, or the image of it here, as S parametric version of the cohomological picture, a parameters S's. And so the image of that space for S equal to zero, it is H minus, it's just cohomology theory, but then it varies, it depends on S. And therefore, when I lift the function was defined as on this space to the entire space, make it an element of a Fock space using my polarization, really, it depends. So the polarization varies with S, so it brings some extra dependence on S. Now I'd like to state the theorem. This quantum Hirzebruch-Riemann-Roch theorem, it says the following. So I take this generating function of Gromit invariance in Kabordian theory, Kabordian valued one. I consider it as an element in the Fock space using my new version of Dilaton shift and this new version of the polarization. Now, the quantum Chern character identifies the symplectic spaces, and therefore, by Stone von Neumann theorem, it identifies the Fock spaces as reducible representations of the Heisenberg, the algebra projectively up to scalar. And if I understand in this sense the action of the quantum Chern character on this function, therefore it gives me at least up to a scalar, which I ignore now, gives me some element in the Fock space corresponding to this picture. There, you can think of it therefore not, well, if you like, you can think of it as family depending on S, family of elements of the Fock space depending on S.
What?
hierarchical after diffeomorphism in the picture, right?
That's
really a representation of
diffeomorphism. Diffeomorphism
of what? You have an after
diffeomorphism. It's linear map. It's a linear symbolic structure, linear unification. So it's really Heisenberg algebra, just translation here. It's really a representation. There is a linear symplectic geometry, linear representation of symplectic group. So therefore, it lives in the Fock space of cohomology theory and depends on S there. And the statement that it's related to, well, I can say it in two ways. I can say that it is. It gives me the Gromovitz invariance, but twisted by this bundle E, which is tangent X minus one-dimensional trivial bundle. So therefore, the result is after that we get twisted Gromovitz invariance, twisted by this bundle. Or more explicitly, if you use quantum Riemann-Roch theorem I stated last time. For those who were there, it means that it's usual Gromovitz invariance, untwisted ones. Zero means that, well, that S1 is 2, etc., equal to zero. There was a delta tilde hat, so there is some operator here, which is root of E, root of Todd E, product M is from 1 to infinity, Todd of E tensor alpha minus M. L is universal line bundle. E is this thing. And this expression should be processed through some asymptotical expansion tilde and some quantization formalism, and it belongs to the loop group, the way it acts on the Fock space. Therefore, well, this part is just it's from the previous talk, for those who were there. So, to finish, what this formula tells us that, as I told you before, so the variations of the complex structure of the curve is what kind of sitting in this part of modification. It is just twisted Gromovitz invariance. It's handled somehow by transformations from the loop group. But whatever is left from moduli of Riemannian surfaces, whatever part of the tangent bundle to moduli space of stable maps comes from variations of complex structure on the Riemannian surfaces, is entirely taken care of by this formalism, by the change in the symplectic formalism. And so there are two changes. One of them is non-trivial Dilaton shift defined by inversion in the formal group, the polarization, which changes, in some sense, the Dilaton shift takes care about the logarithmic part of the tangent bundle, and the what is left from a moduli of curves, what is sitting on the divisor of compactifying divisor of singular curves, as I told you, it is some gluing, and therefore it corresponds to kind of second order differential operators acting on our generating functions, is what you can see. So when you change polarization in this way, so this subspace is preserved, but this is varying. It means that you are moving it by kind of p-square type quadratic Hamiltonian, and so the way how that change is introduced through this formula automatically takes care in the correct way about this phenomenon. So, and that's a mystery, so why? We don't know why it happens. The proof consists of 20 pages of cancellations, just to compute left and right hand side using Grignard de Clairvaux, and so everything cancels out, and you have no clue why it happens. Okay, thank you. That's